welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, and I'm joined today by Noemi Rojas. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Dennis. My name is Noemi. I'm the editor of Synapse, the region's life sciences news digest. Today we bring Dr. Ogechika Alozi to the microphone, the studio, and also Jennifer Wright. Dr. Alozi is the Chief Medical Informatics Officer at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Jennifer Wright is the Director of Marketing and Outreach at the Paso del Norte Health Information Exchange. But today we're talking about digital health records. Now, as I understand it, in El Paso, people have access to their health records. Everyone. Is that true, Dr. Alozi?
Well, first of all, thank you both for having me back. Yeah, that is pretty true. It all depends on who your provider is and what health network you go to. But yeah, patients have the right to have access to all of their health medical records.
Now, when you say have a right, is that a law?
It is. So CMS passed this back in February of this year, actually saying that patients have access and have the right to have access to any of their medical records, not just their medical records, but their lab values specifically. So prior to this, patients had access. They could go to their doctor or hospital and say, hey, I want my medical record. And they would be given a form to sign and they would do that. But now CMS has not only said that they can have access to that, but you can also have access to your blood tests. So any blood test you have, not only the lab, but your health provider has to give you access to it so that you can look at your test yourself.
What about x-rays and urinalysis and things like that?
We're not there yet on every place. I mean, Texas Tech is. A lot of the other health networks in the city are. But it just depends on the provider and where you get your x-ray and a lot of those other procedures done. There are a number of places in the city that directly interface. So an interface is something where the result of the test goes directly into your medical record. And so whenever you do the test, you could see it. But not everybody is interfaced.
Why is it important for people to be able to access their health information?
I think the simplest thing is that knowledge is power, right? If you have knowledge, you have the ability to come to the table with your provider on an equal basis. You wouldn't buy a house without knowing how much it costs or the interest rate or what your FICA credit score was. And I don't think there's any reason that as a patient, you should go to your doctor blind. You want to be able to know, hey, these are the options I have. This is how much this will cost. These are other places I can go. How good is my doctor at doing this, right? Because those are all the things that allow you to actually be a good and active consumer in the health industry.
Well, you mentioned cost. Man, that is frustrating. As a mother of two small children, even a dog. I had my dog spayed, you know, but it's hard to know how much, you know, it's all going to add up to. With me, my health insurance deductible is $3,000.
Ouch.
And so, so when I take my daughter for an x-ray, you know, I pretty much have to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there's no way right now for people to be able to, like, see a menu of pricing, right, when you go to get an x-ray or.
Well, thanks again for having me, too. You know, it is the future of medicine that you'll be able to compare outcomes among hospitals, compare costs, compare ratings of physicians, which there are some sites for that now. But to have it be really empirical, their actual outcomes rather than somebody's opinion of their bedside manner, which sometimes is the greatest influencer. This is what is coming, and not everybody's comfortable with it. But it is, like anything, going to take some time, and that's just part of the changing complexion of healthcare in our country, including laws like Dr. Alozi was talking about.
The big picture here is now we're able to at least get a portion of all of the records,
right.
But now we have to sign all of the physicians, all of the OBGYNs,
right.
And just everybody connected in the medical community to one another. Why is it so hard?
Well, you point out something really interesting, Dennis, in that for patients who are suffering chronic diseases, that is the most onerous part where you have to carry medical records. If you're a cancer patient or if you have diabetes or if you're going from specialist to specialist, as people with diabetes, for example, often are, they might have a cardiologist, an endocrinologist, a family practice, or some other type of primary care physician. And it is very frustrating to have to refill out every form, every time, every visit, write down their medical history, even though they've seen the doctor before, to carry bags of medication along with them. And that's what the Health Information Exchange is nationwide are designed to help with is that imagine instead if you just showed up and once they had your name or your mother's name, and often, you know, you're taking either whether it's your child like Nomi or you've taken your mom to the doctor, you just can go. They'll have their unique identifier. It's usually a combination of name, birth date, maybe, you know, combined with address, Social Security, whatever it is. And then they'll be able to have your complete medical history there across the spectrum of care so that wherever you go, they're aware of what medications you're on, what did your other specialist prescribe, and they will lighten that load for you, and everything can happen much more quickly. They can see test results from an MRI at another location instantaneously. We're not there yet, and we're getting there, and part of the barrier is there's cost. There are all types of barriers to the interoperability. As Dr. Alozi mentioned, the interfaces have to be created, and that's why we exist. But we've got a long way to go still.
Hopefully not that long.
Well, right.
Now, for folks listening, and you use the word interoperability and the interface. Yes, it's a interoperability. What does that mean?
I'll take a shot at that. Think of it as, so you go to a bank. I don't know if you're a Bank of America or Bank of the West, Westar, Chase Manhattan, whatever it is. Each bank has their own little shop, right? They have their own little website, but they don't really talk to each other, right? So Chase doesn't talk to Bank of America. Bank of America doesn't talk to Wellstar. Well, guess what? Your credit score does. So if you log into your credit score has every piece of information, whether it's from the bank, whether your mortgage company, whether you bought a car, whether your kid who's still under your credit report went to Vegas or did whatever and ran up a huge bill. That's all in one place. And so if you want to go to where the truth is about what should be your financial status or what's called, let's call it your financial health, you go to your credit score. Think of an information exchange or a health information exchange as that huge credit score, right? It takes all the pieces of information from a Tenet hospital, from an HCA, from UMC, from Texas Tech, and puts it in one place. The interoperability is getting all of those people to talk to each other and put them in one place so that you, the consumer, can look at it easily. Because what you don't want is to have this complex mess when you look at it and like, oh my God, I'm never going to understand what's going on here. That interoperability allows it to be a seamless and very clean look. So when you look, oh, yeah, my mom saw the doctor 10 years ago on the east side and she had diabetes. Guess what? Her A1C was 12 then. Now today I can see that December of 2014, it's 6. My doctor must be doing a great job because that's the key. You know, so you're able to track things and see them in a very simple, clean look.
And it'll even be if my mother saw the doctor in Kansas City. Will that
so
also?
We're not there yet. Okay. So a number of things, and I'll defer to Jennifer on this too, is each region and even within Texas, which is a huge state, multiple information exchanges exist in Texas, right? So ours is the West Texas. There's one in Austin. There's one around San Antonio, Dallas, Houston. There's a North Texas one. And then some parts of the country that are smaller. So up in the Northeast, Connecticut, Delaware, and New Hampshire, not only does each individual state have one, but they have a regional one. Right. And so we're not there in West Texas, but the Texas coalition that looks at these things is starting to think that, you know what, people in Texas are mobile enough that doesn't really make sense for somebody to have a Dallas and a Houston. Why don't we have a East Texas or a Central Texas? And eventually it'll be nationwide. But like she said, there's a lot of steps before we get there. I think what's most important is that patients understand that even their doctor, even if it's just their doctor, they can go to their doctor and say, hey, can I have my information? Most doctors in this town these days have what are called patient portals. And so you're able to see your information on a patient portal. The next level of that is something that Sierra Providence has, which is they have a patient portal for the whole system. So it's not just one doctor, but it's the whole system. And then that integrates into what El Paso del Norte is doing, which is the health information exchange for the whole city and the region.
So I guess some cities are further along in this technology than other parts. How far along are we in El Paso?
True. Well, you know, it comes down to when you started and whether or not you are like have a state funding or a state mandate. And in the states in which HIEs were legislated, mandated, they are, of course, much farther along and everyone signed up and there was plenty of money for it. The way Texas started, and Dr. Losey is absolutely right, we're going to join up with the regional HIEs. We'll join together for a state HIE, and then the states will all join. So to get to your earlier question, you will have a nationwide HIE. That's what was legislated four years ago. It's been a long time in the works. We are at the point where we are waiting on legal contracts to be signed by the major hospital groups, and those are imminent. And once they do, they'll dump their data. And once that data starts coming into us, we will be able to then start targeting the physicians so that the physicians can then benefit from the hospital data that's in the system and be able to put their own patient information in there. So I can't give a date because we've been waiting for this for some time now, but we do expect it literally any day.
I see how it works almost from an analogous standpoint, what happened with the cell phone revolution, where you had different cell companies around the country. You had Sprint, Nextel, Singular, AT&T, T-Mobile. You had all these companies, and all of them did one thing, which is to provide cell service. However, none of them talked to one another, so some of these cell towers weren't compatible with other companies. Eventually, the Federal Telecommunications Act said that you can go ahead and start interfacing one with another. That way you don't compete against one another, but through just business transactions alone. So that's where we were 10 years ago. That's where you're at now. Now it's just a matter of everybody signing on and getting it together. Now I see what the problem is, and the problem is only the legislation coming into effect to a point.
I think one thing, too, to think about, because we've used a lot of complicated, long-lettered words, and a lot of this process within the El Paso area is new to us, right? I think we should really divide two things, right? So one is, what does the patient need to make their experience best, right? What does the patient need to own their health information? And from a patient side, a patient's looking at a portal. And that's where they see their health information for their provider or their hospital system. Now, from a provider and a system side, we look at a health information exchange because we want to know, did my patient go from Tenet to HCA? Did they go from Dr. Alozi to Dr. Escobar and vice versa, right? So those are the kind of things that you start to track. Also, what really becomes key for a system, right? If you really want to improve the health of a system, you need to be able to count and track numbers. Health systems get paid by CMS and Blue Cross, the Blue Shields, the Humanas, the Aetnas, by how well their patients do. We don't have any idea really, right? We know that we charge patients to come in, but like Jennifer talked about, we have no outcomes. We don't know whether you seeing me for hepatitis C is better than you seeing Dr. X across the street, right? And that's really what you want to know as a provider, because you want to know, if I'm going to give my $70 copay and I'm going to spend out my $3,000 deductible, which of those guys is better, which is not going to waste my time, which is going to give me access to the best care that I desire. And so in the long-term panacea, that's really what you want, and that's what a lot of these things are aiming at.
It's true. And everything these days that you'll hear about going forward is moving toward population health, which is exactly what Dr. Alozi was talking about. When you have empirical data, when you have somebody's weight, blood pressure, blood sugar in a record because it was taken at a lab or at a doctor's office, as opposed to self-reported data, then you can mine it for public health across our region. It can improve the health of our region because we'll know accurate data at any given time rather than self-reported data, which sometimes when they ask you your weight and height, sometimes we fudge.
We fudge on age. Talk about weight and height.
And then I see the other part to this equation, which is even more beneficial. Let's say you live in Van Horn or Valentine, Texas, and you're coming to El Paso to Del Sol or Sierra Providence or whatever, for whatever reason. Having access to your records there would be able to hear best tell what's good, what's not good, what we need to do. And so the rural people actually benefit maybe even more so than being in the suburban or urban areas. So getting everybody tied in is really beneficial.
I'll give you an analogy. So last week I had carpal tunnel surgery at University Medical Center. And when I was doing my preoperative process in the weeks before, they asked me about whether I'd had an EMG and how I had done it, general or local. And there's just a lot of things I couldn't remember. I mean, busy days. And so I actually logged into my patient portal in the doctor's office from when I was in Minnesota, because that's where I lived before I moved to El Paso. And I was able to just print it out. Like, this is the date. This is what happened. These are the outcomes. And they just looked at it. Okay. They put it into their system. And so that ease of taking one piece of information and putting it in their system was able to speed me through the preoperative process, right? And so I didn't spend a whole day going to do blood tests and physical exams and a whole host of other things. They're able to take the information, put it in their system, and say, okay, you're approved, go on.
Or a recent experience I had was, I want to switch pediatricians. Okay. And so I asked my current pediatrician, can you give me my daughter and my son's health records? And first they asked me why, which right. I don't think that's their business. But they asked me why, and I told them why. And then they said I had to fill out a paper and pay $35. I forget what they wanted me to pay. I mean, I have a right, you just told me, to access. So can the doctor charge you a fee, like administrative fee or paper fee, you know?
Well, that's the beauty of having it online electronically. And that is what you describe is a very uncomfortable conversation to have. And imagine if, rather than having to talk to some front desk person who was less than receptive to your request, if all you had to do was just make an appointment somewhere new, and then you would already, and your provider would already have access to your children's records via the health information exchange, which we will have a patient portal. And but your provider then, as long as he's a member, would also be able to access it.
I mean, I'm just assuming my current pediatrician doesn't have a patient portal because they never mentioned one to me. I just assume they don't have one. I mean, should we assume that our doctors don't have a patient portal?
I would say, as a provider, if the provider hasn't mentioned it to you, 50% of the time they probably don't have one. But I would always ask. I always tell my clients, you know what, if I forget something, I'm busy. I mean, things are going on, you're busy too, and then you come into the clinic, just ask me. And so I would push people to say, if there's one thing that they get out of this conversation that we're having, the knowledge that a lot of practices do have patient portals, and ask your provider, hey, do you have a patient portal so I can see my kids' information? Do you have a patient portal so I can see my information, my mom's information, whatever it may be? They may not, but that question that you ask them may trigger them to get it done. And they may just have forgotten. And hey, what about if they've already paid for a patient portal to give you that service, but their front desk forgot to give it to you, right? So I say, trigger them, right? Sometimes you have to be that extra step, that extra trigger, because the providers are busy, you're busy, their front desk is busy, and so they may have it.
So does having a patient portal cost the physician? I mean, is there resistance on the physician part to, you know, put up the money for that?
Well, let me say this, and Dr. Lozzi, you chime in any time here. The transition for physicians nationwide, and in El Paso perhaps in particular, because we do have quite a few physicians that are in solo practices, the transition to electronic medical records has been painful, costly, and it's hasn't been always easy. There are some physicians just take to it like a fish to water, and my doctor is very comfortable sitting there in a screen, and I never feel as though he's not paying attention to me when he's typing into the screen. We just have a conversation that takes a little bit longer, but it's been all over the board as far as what EMRs physicians have chosen to buy, and so some of them have more bells and whistles. Some of them have patient portals. Some of them offer that for an additional charge. It's really been quite the learning experience as I've looked into how many different EMRs are in use in El Paso and how many physicians have opted out because it's just been too frustrating. The health information exchange is the payoff for that painful transition because it will simplify, streamline, avoid medical errors, avoid drug-drug interactions, save costs down the line. But not everyone has it, and not everyone has the same system, and different systems offer different options as far as what the version that you buy.
Do all the EMRs come with a patient portal? Is that standard with an EMR?
It's not standard. I don't believe.
So there could be a physician who made the transition to electronic medical records, but they still don't have a patient portal. That's possible?
They may or may not. They may have activated it. They may have not. We're in citywide. We're all over the board as far as how far along we are and how sophisticated we have become with using our EMRs.
I would say as a provider, though, so majority of the providers, at least that I know and that I've worked with in the community, and we talk about health IT consulting, majority of the EMRs that exist out there for solo and smaller practices, most of them do come with a patient portal. It's just a question whether they've actually activated it or not. One of the things you also have to remember is that CMS, so Medicare and Medicaid services, who pays us essentially for seeing clients, they've actually mandated through something called meaningful use that all providers have to give their patients access to a patient portal. And that was in 2012. That's been going on since 2012. And so providers actually have an incentive to do that. Now, by 2015, it's not just 10%. It's going to be extended to 50% of all your clients have to have access to the patient portal. And so it'll get ramped up as time goes on. I was just showing Dennis that on my phone, I have access to my patient portal from Texas Tech. And so I can see that if I touch my appointments button, I have an appointment coming up this Thursday with my orthopod to look at my hand, and hopefully it's healing. And so those are the kind of things that you want to have, because, I mean, you're a busy person. We all have kids or family members who are sick, and you want to be able to check these things on the go without having to call your doctor and sit on the phone for 30 minutes, right? That's a waste of everybody's time, my time, the clinic's time. If you can just check it on some sort of mobile device, log in to the computer at work and say, oh, wow, I have a doctor's appointment on Thursday. This is awesome. And I can just go, or you can change it. Some portals allow you to change the appointment. Some portals will actually allow you, and I could do this if I was on a computer, ask for a request of a refill. So you say, oh, I'm running out of my blood pressure medication. I have like 3 pills left. You can send in a refill and it'll send it to your pharmacy automatically.
Ooh, that'd be
right?
Nice.
So these are all the time saving measures that technology can leverage. Cause you know, some people often say, well, I'm kind of worried about this. This is just like banking. 10 years ago, Dennis, if I had said, hey, this is your card and you're going to be able to run your whole household economy off of your cell phone, you said, no, that's not possible. I'm not comfortable with it. Now we take it for granted.
Right.
We go to drive-ins, we do mobile banking with Google Pay or Apple iPay, you can send people money with three taps and you can send people $2,000. And so those are the kind of things that healthcare has been behind. And Jennifer is completely right. We have providers have sort of gotten in, we're busy, obviously, and there's a lot of complicated medical things that we're doing, but we've been so used to doing it one way that whenever you change, it's a sea shift, right? And so people don't want to change for the sake of change. And so I hope that a lot of the things that El Paso del Norte is doing, that Tenet's doing, that Texas Tech is doing, University Medical Center, that these are all things that can begin to activate our patients to take care of their own health as we play partnerships in their healthcare.
Now, we're running out of time, but I did want to talk about maybe some downsides to having digital health records. Can insurance companies look at my health history and, you know, like discriminate because maybe I had, you know.
So, yes, they can. But remember, they already are. Right. So there's nothing that they are doing that will be new. In fact, I would say that for the first time in medical history, we are beginning, when I say we, providers and patients are beginning to have the advantage of actually seeing the data. Remember, the insurance companies give you insurance because they know who you are. They know how old you are, how much you weigh, how healthy you are, what prescriptions you fill, how often you go to the doctor, because every time you go to the doctor, you pay for it. And they have all that information. And so they can change your premiums based on it. For the first time in history, we're beginning to say, wait, I didn't go there, or I didn't fill that medication, or you know what, there's somebody else that has better insurance than you and they're going to charge me less. And so the playing field is becoming leveled. And the more information we have, the more we're able to push back at the insurance companies and say, you're not giving me the care that I deserve.
My question here is one of, I guess you could call it listener naivete. We've been talking about health providers, and the assumption is physicians and pediatricians and whatnot. Does this extend to dental care, podiatrists?
Definitely. No. Definitely. So the dentist that I go to, he sends me a link on my patient portal. And my kids are on it. My wife's on it. I'm on it. And that's how we do our dental care. If we want to change an appointment, we just log in and change it. And so podiatrists, whomever in the health field these days, practices that are evolving and continue to evolve, most of them have patient portals.
So, Jennifer, how do they if we have physicians who are like barely getting clued in that they need to get into this system and haven't yet done it because of a busy lifestyle and schedule, how do they get a hold of you to get this thing done for their office?
Well, my information is at our website, which is the pdnhie.org, and they can go on there and find out how to contact us. If they're struggling with adopting an EMR, I recommend that they reach out to the local county medical society and find out which the doctors have been happiest with. If they don't have an EMR, they basically can log in and view information, but they won't be able to participate by putting data about their patients in.
What we do in public radio is we try to illuminate as much as we can to as many people as we can. And there oftentimes we'll have people coming in barely like yesterday who just moved into this region and didn't know that they could go ahead and just, boom, do that.
I know that there are some patients who may be older and not as tech savvy. And so There's probably going to be the patient who still want to call in or still want to need to do the paperwork. So, and that's still going to be.
Oh, yeah. We're not. I mean, as healthcare, just with anything, you don't have to use your debit card because you want to go to the bank. You can still go to the bank. There's a reason that there are still brick and mortar shops. And I think it's a question of convenience and comfort level for clients across the board. If you want to do it online and you're tech savvy, you do it. And if you need to go into the hospital or go into your clinic or call in, that's always is going to be available. So I would say people shouldn't be worried or be afraid because of technology, but if they have access to it and the comfort level to use it, they should use it to improve their healthcare.
You know, we've been comparing like banks, you know, and things like that. And, you know, banks, Target, they get hacked and, you know, people's information gets abused.
Right.
That's a possibility here too, right?
I mean, all healthcare systems, not only across the country, but specifically here in El Paso, take security very, very seriously. Between HIPAA and a host of security laws that exist, all the organizations in this region take security very seriously. And, I mean, knock on wood, we've been lucky that at least in our region, we haven't really had any serious security hacks, and I think we continue to strive for that.
But that's always a possibility.
It's always a possibility, yes. And so I always tell people, right, I mean, if you look at what are the most common passwords, right, it's 1234 or it's ABCD. Mm-hmm. Yes, in a way, you have to take some of that responsibility not to set easy passwords for somebody to hack through as well.
And
but it works on both sides.
Change your passwords from
often,
time to time.
Every 30 to 90 days.
Well, I appreciate the guests here today for coming and educating us on digital health records. Dr. Alozi, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Wright, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Dennis?
I want to thank you, Ogie, and Jennifer, and Nomi. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about something that's really important for all of us to move into the 21st century together, which is gathering up all of our medical records, putting them in a safe place, in a cloud-based sort of a thing, maybe, so that we can access them wherever we go, and unfortunately, wherever we wind up getting sick. A doctor someplace in maybe Eau Claire, Wisconsin can download everything, and that's a wonderful thing. But the first step is what we've been talking about today, and it won't be the last time we talk about it either. I also want to thank Bridget McAllister for not only recording this episode of El Paso Primetime, but also doing some post-production editing with it as well. Thank you, listeners, very much for checking out this episode of El Paso Primetime.